when the weather suddenly changes. NBC Boston's early warning weather has you covered. The NBC Boston team has the tools and the technology to keep you safe. With Sky Ranger flying high over Boston watching the roads, or Storm Ranger, our one-of-a-kind mobile Doppler radar, and Weather Warrior, our four-wheel drive storm chaser. When the weather changes, early warning weather has you covered. On the only NBC station in Boston, NBC Boston Channel 10.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
Welcome to this episode of the Pelvic Messenger Radio Show, which was founded by Elizabeth Ose in 2011 and is managed by Dr. Amy Stein, physical therapist, and Dr. Alexandra Millspa, a mental health therapist, and supported by the International Pelvic Pain Society and Beyond Basic Physical Therapy. The International Pelvic Pain Society was established in 1996 to bring hope to both men and women suffering from persistent pelvic pain by raising public awareness and educating healthcare providers on the proper diagnosis and management of pelvic and abdominal pain, thereby changing the lives of patients worldwide. Since 2003, Beyond Basics Physical Therapy in New York City has specialized in treating pelvic pain in men, women, and children, and has a similar mission as the IPPS. Beyond Basics provides their patients with the highest quality and individualized care through a multidisciplinary approach. Beyond Basic PT is focused on treating musculoskeletal causes of pelvic floor dysfunction, abdominal pelvic pain, prenatal and postpartum care, and women's health concerns. The information provided on the Pelvic Messenger is meant to be for informational purposes only and is not a substitute for professional advice from your medical doctor.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us today on the Pelvic Messenger Talk Radio Show. My name is Stephanie Stamas, a physical therapist working at Beyond Basics PT in New York City, and I will be your host. Today, I get the privilege of speaking with Holly Herman, a physical therapist who has been foundational in advancing the field of pelvic health in regards to bowel, bladder, and sexual function. If you don't know who Holly is, let me tell you a little bit about her. When I was first starting as a physical therapist, there were only two organizations that offered training in pelvic health, the APTA, or American Physical Therapy Association, and Herman and Wallace. And this is Holly Herman, the co-founder of Herman and Wallace. So when I say that she was integral to the advancement of our field, she really was. So let me tell you a little bit more about her. She has been practicing as a PT for 41 years now and received her doctorate of physical therapy from MGH, Institute of Allied Health. She is a certified orthopedic clinical specialist, a women's health clinical specialist, a certified biofeedback therapist, and a certified pelvic rehabilitation practitioner. She is one of only two PTs in the entire world certified as a sexuality counselor by the American Association for Sexual Educators, Counselors, and Therapists, and one of only four PTs in the entire world certified as a women's health sexuality fellow by the International Society for the Study of Women's Sexual Health. Holly was a co-founder of Herman Wallace Pelvic Rehab Institute in 2005, and now she currently conducts her own courses worldwide, as well as maintaining a full-time practice in Cambridge, Massachusetts. She is the author of numerous peer-reviewed articles and book chapters. She is an article reviewer for several medical journals and is the co-author of the popular book, How to Raise Children Without Breaking Your Back. Holly has been a full-time faculty member of the Northeastern University PT Department, a clinical instructor at the Boston University PT Clinic, and a part-time instructor at Simmons. She serves on the board of several foundations, is the recipient of the Elizabeth Noble Award and the Saudi Arabian Physical Therapy Association Award for all the wonderful work that she has done to promote both men and women's health worldwide. While Holly and I are talking today, we'd really love to hear from our listeners. So if you are listening today, please call in with questions. Number is 323-693-3847, and we really hope to hear from some of you. So welcome, Holly.
Hello, Stephanie. Thank you for having me on the show. Your interviews have been so educational, and I hope that anyone listening in today will find our discussion interesting.
Well, thank you so much for the compliment. It's actually a huge honor to you today. I know myself and a lot of our listeners are really looking forward to just soaking up some of your wisdom. So thank you for coming on the show. So, Holly, you have been in the field of pelvics for PT for a long time. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got into it and some of the changes that you've seen over the past 41 years in the realm of pelvic floor PT?
Yeah. So I started my first job in rural upstate New York in the Adirondacks. I was responsible for about 1,000 square miles. And from day one, I went out with nurses to do wound care, postpartum, pregnant, episiotomy care, C-sections, incontinence. So from day one of my entire career, it was interdisciplinary. So I only have to say that I improv'd every single day that I was on the job. I had to work with home care people, family members, relatives. And then in Boston, when I came, I was working half day with geriatrics and also with pediatrics. So I would ask the mothers, how were they? And every one of them burst out crying, saying that nobody had ever paid any attention to them, that they had had incontinence, that they were having all sorts of problems. And I had an aha moment at that time that those women were so invisible, so dismissed, so neglected, and still to this day. So from then, I sought out Elizabeth Noble because the Australians knew about pelvic floor before even the Ice Age. And I was in the right time at the right time, at the right place. And she went off to have her baby and basically gave me an interview of handing me a number of journals and doing an internal and external pelvic floor treatment. And I was left with Linda Gallagher to take over the clinic. So again, improvising. Wow. So from there, I had mentoring from a midwife and was a labor assistant, again, interdisciplinary. And the entire time I had Netter's Atlas of Anatomy strapped to my body. Because that was the only thing that was available ever at that time, 40 years ago. So after that, I built the Maternal and Child Health Center with Tricia Jenkins. We hired Beth Shelley and 10 other women in different disciplines for taking care of these prenatal and postpartum. And anytime we went anywhere, we would always think, rather than medications, this is a muscle problem. This is a muscle problem with pelvic pain. So Dr. Elizabeth Stewart at that time, 40 years ago, came up to us and said that she was seeing a condition called vulvodynia, and could we help her patients? So that was just enormous for us to really start off pelvic pain right then and there. And after that, I met Kathy Wallace, and it was a match made in heaven. We would call each other 8 times a day, and, you know, poor thing. I would call her at 9 o'clock after I had seen a patient, and I would say, you know, I just treated this patient's hip and her spine and her urinary urgency went away. What do you think is going on? So we would try and figure out all of those things and try and build up the pelvic floor courses and techniques for coccydynia, evaluation of the pelvic floor, and putting it on the map. So it's really been a wonderful, wonderful experience. And I feel like I have attained my mission because now there was a whole journal, an issue in the pelvic physiotherapy journal that was all about pelvic floor. And also we had a whole journal in the geriatric section that was all about sexual activities. So I send shout outs to Jane Fram, Elaine Wilder, Rhonda Cantorinos, Jill Boisnault, Annette, Joe Laycock, Pauline Chiarelli, Penny Simkin, and Helen Herdman for really showing me the way and being able to make it so that all this could happen.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like a lot of this, you were just, like you said, you surrounded yourself with an interdisciplinary team and then just kept asking questions and, like, pushing forward. You've seen a huge change over your field where there was, like, no pelvic floor to now it being, you know, having a whole article in these prominent journals, which is awesome. How do you feel like pelvic floor physical therapy can still progress forward? Like, where do you see the next steps of the field help better serve patients? Where are we still lacking?
Yeah, well, where we're still lacking is that essentially some of the missing components are that we just still have to get the word out to everyone to really make it so that we can help people and all of the rest of the healthcare professionals know what we do. I gave a lecture at NAMS, North American Menopause Society, and talked about physical therapy. And there were 1,000 of the OBGYNs and nurse practitioners, physician's assistants. And for almost 4 days, I was interrupted on the dance floor when I would be coming out of the bathroom by all of these doctors who had nowhere to go, who didn't know that physical therapy existed, that we could do as much as we possibly could do, and that this was something that was really viable and incredibly important for patients and for the entire healthcare professional team that everyone should have. So I think that we just have to continue to spread the word.
Yeah, absolutely. So Holly, you are only one of two PTs in the whole world that are certified sexuality counselors. So first of all, I feel like I need to say congratulations for that.
Thank you.
But also, can you tell us a little bit about how that has changed how you interact with PTs, how that has added to your practice and treating men and women with sexual dysfunction?
Sure. I think the biggest thing that it did was give me confidence to be able to ask questions.
Mm.
Nobody asks, and it is so necessary. Thank goodness for Tally Rosenbaum, who defined bowel, bladder, and sexual function as our activities of living, and also that we, I would add, that they're activities of nightly living. The statistics are just abysmal in terms of people being asked about their sexual function. And it is such a vital part of their being. It is something, if the relationship is good, then it adds 10 to 20% to the relationship. If there's a problem or sexual issues, it can be detrimental by 60% to the relationship. It causes problems with self-esteem, self-confidence, depression, worry about starting to get involved in relationships and how to tell somebody about what's going on with them. So I went and became a certified sexual counselor so that I could go to the meetings and stand in front of the mic, and rather than saying that I was a physical therapist and being dismissed, I could say that I was a certified sexual counselor and also a physical therapist, and this is how I practice. I am able to see, to look, to touch, to examine, to work with different modalities in order to augment what sexual therapists do. And other than the two of us, most of the or all of the other sexual counselors, educators, and therapists are either psychologists or they are medical doctors or they are psychiatrists. So many of them are not licensed to look or to touch, and many of them don't have the time to really hear the patient's story. So it really is asking patients, listening to what they have to say, and being able to work from there so that I can tailor their program individually to them and also to their significant other.
Do you often ask the significant other to come in? Do you find that to be an important part of reintegrating sexual health?
Absolutely. I think it's really important. I think that most couples feel that they are the only ones, that it is somebody is to blame, that it's somebody's fault, that there is no one else out there who are having these problems. And to be able to bring them in and say, congratulations, you are showing your love for one another, you are showing your care and respect for one another, you're showing your eagerness for communication, and to be able to make it so that this is going to work. You are united in this together, and it is a privilege and an honor to work with both of you. Let me give you some information that may help you, and let me show you various ways that you can either find sexual positions, that you can touch each other and find that it can be more beneficial, that you can talk to one another and communicate your likes and dislikes. So mm-hmm. I think it is really wonderful when people can bring their partner or even partners into mm-hmm. the session and we can work together.
Yeah. Have you ever had a scenario, and maybe you could give some advice in this scenario as well, where a partner or partners are not supportive, where they come in and they, you actually find that there could be part of like a problem of shame, of, you know, difficulty moving towards intimacy?
Absolutely. There are a lot of people who are very worried. A lot of times men are feeling like somebody's going to blame them, or they are feeling bad that they are hurting their partner, whether it's a male or a female or partners. Mm-hmm. So it is really quite helpful to be able to say, let's talk about this rather and move forward. Let's make this so it's concrete. Let's give you hope. Let's give you optimism. Let's make it so that it works for both of you rather than just one of you. Let's make it so that it can be something that you can actualize, and to realize that it is an anatomical and in most cases a physiological problem rather than something that where somebody's damaged or broken or at fault.
Yeah. Do you typically recommend anyone who's dealing with sexual pain or pelvic perineal genital pain to see a sexual counselor?
Absolutely. There are numerous sexual counselors and therapists, so meaning a psychologist, a psychiatrist, a social worker, or somebody who is licensed to be able to go talk with that person, and then I get permission and authorization to be able to share my findings. If somebody's going to give exercises for sensate touching or giving exercises for communication or ways of being able to find out what one likes or doesn't like, it's really helpful to know if the woman has vulvodynia, if the male mm-hmm. has erectile dysfunction, if it's from a bacterial problem, if it's a yeast problem, to really find out what's going on, and then also if it's a simple musculoskeletal problem. So I love working with the sexual therapists as a team member, interdisciplinary team member, along with the gynecologist, the obstetrician, the physician's assistant, nurse practitioner, or family practitioner. I think everybody should have a healthcare team behind them.
I agree. But definitely, if anything, makes a patient feel like they have a team. They have a team that is for them, that is promoting their health, and they're not alone, because that's such a common thread among patients of just feeling really alone. But building up that team provides so much hope, which is so important for any healing journey. That was great advice.
What happens is that so many of the sexual issues that we find really do have a medical aspect to them. Mm-hmm. So if there is a person who has a erectile dysfunction, it really shows in most cases that there is going to be a correlation with cardiovascular disease, coronary artery disease, and sometimes that's within 40 months of having a performance problem, epilepsy, diabetes, heart variability, a number of different kinds of problems. And for women, it can be vulvodynia that is hormonally mediated or endocrine mediated, that it could be inflammation from something that's going on with an autoimmune hypersensitivity or a genetic predisposition. So to find out what's going on, to have a medical diagnosis, is so helpful, because then we can really find out what's going on.
Yeah, totally. So when you are trying to figure out kind of where to send someone when someone comes in, and you're right, you got to rule out all these other medical diagnoses, you kind of just send someone to check all these things off, or are you like, what kind of clues in their history and in their story help you to figure out what the next steps are?
Very good question. The first most important thing is to actually listen to their story. Their statistics, again, are really abominable about patients being interrupted within 2 minutes of starting to tell their story. How are you going to find out what's going on if you don't listen to their story? So I put my pen down, I listen to what they have to say. And also, I have sent out by electronic email, I've sent out a number of different forms. Some are validated forms that have to do with female sexual functional index. Some are the NIH chronic prostatitis, both for men and for women.
And women.
For finding out about bowel and bladder and prolapse and also sexual function. And for men, for the International Index of Erectile Effort. So there are so many different forms that can be sent out depending upon what they've given back as information that I then can send out and have them fill out. Or if it seems like it's not going to be appropriate to ask them about their sexual function, I wait until I meet them, till I hear their story, till I find out what kind of medications they are on, that what kind of background they have, when they've last been seen medically, what their symptoms are, and also have done a musculoskeletal screening to find out what is happening, because a lot of times it's really not only what's going on in the pelvic floor. Went and Spitznagel found out that 48% of women or patients that have urinary urgency and problems with pelvic floor actually had lumbar spine and hip and thoracic problems. Also in Borello in France in April of 2017 found impairments outside the pelvic floor, that led to pelvic and patient symptoms. And of course, Diane Lee and LJ Lee are telling us that we need to look at the integrated systems model for being able to find what is really the driver. So we have lots of evidence and articles and people that are doing research that are really saying that we not only need to look at the pelvic floor, but we need to look at the entire body and look at the musculoskeletal systems. So after I've done all of that is when I will then sit down with the patient and really figure out who to send them to. Is it a natural path so that they can be looked at for their not only their hormones, but also for some of their nutrition or some of their other symptoms that they've talked about in terms of fatigue or loss of weight? Is it endocrine people for looking at thyroid and Hashimoto problems? Is it the gynecologist? Is it the urogyn? Is it the family practitioner? There are so many people who could be involved that I have quite a list of practitioners who I am blessed with to have here in the Boston area to work with. I'm sure that you find the same thing in New York, that there are just enormous resources that you send your patients to.
Yes, we are also very lucky to have lots of practitioners that we work with.
Yeah.
Well, so going back to the training that you had through the sexuality counselor, as someone who has gotten really used to asking those kind of hard questions that aren't often asked in surveys to show, you know, like not a lot of doctors, even gynecologists or urologists, don't ask their patients these questions. What do you find to be the important questions that a lot of practitioners, PTs, MDs are skipping over that are really important for us to really understand their symptoms and why they're there presenting to you? What are we missing?
Yeah. So many people don't see that their sexual problems or issues or concerns that they have could be related to some other body part, that they're talking about their hip pain, they're talking about their thorax pain, they're talking about their lumbar pain, and especially with Deb Cody and Stacy Futterman, that they found out that hip labral tears correlate with vaginal pain. And so they've done a number of studies at the Hospital for Special Surgery that have really shown that. So with the questions that we have to ask, we need to say ask open-ended questions. So I like to preface it by saying, I would like to ask you questions regarding your bowel, bladder, and sexual function. I ask these questions of all of my patients because they are activities of everyday life. And is that all right with you? And then I just am as compassionate, as honest, and as normalizing as I possibly can with them. So with them, I have, do you have any concerns for your sexual function or activity? Do you have any concerns with the different parts of the sexual response cycle, such as desire, arousal, orgasm, or afterwards? Do you have any concerns with either pain or positioning? Do you have any concerns about your partner's health or your partner's functioning? Are you currently having sexual activity that is satisfying? Does your hip, your back, your pelvic pain interfere with your sexual activity? Do you think some of the things that you are experiencing musculoskeletally could be involved in your sexual function and concerns? And then I like to say, if I knew more about your sexual activity that would be relevant and would be helpful for me to treat you better? Would you feel comfortable sharing that?
I like that. I like that a lot because that really puts the ball in their court, allows them to feel very comfortable, and opens the door for them to walk through versus you walking through their door.
Yes. Yes. I really like to feel that patients coming to me, I empower them from the beginning. I empower them for them to say what feels comfortable to them, what they need. I really am stressed that I will not hurt them with my evaluation of them, either musculoskeletally, nor if I'm going to do either an external or an internal pelvic floor examination. I'm not going to hurt them. I don't use a speculum, and I really don't believe in the idea, especially with sexual issues, that you have to have pain in order to have gain. So essentially, what we truly want to find is that people are feeling that they are safe, that they are trusting, that they know what's going to happen. I spell it out for them and say, if there's anything that doesn't feel right, you let me know. You run the show.
Yeah. So going back to not believing that you need pain for gain, especially when it comes to pelvic floor and genitalia, that I think is so important, especially with these patients who already associate sexual activity and function in their genitalia with pain, the body, you know, anytime we have pain in the area of our body for a long period of time, we kind of, it no longer becomes a pleasurable area of our body. So what advice would you give in regards to people who come in with a lot of pain and even just like light touch, they're through the roof, they're jumping off the table? What techniques have you found, or is that a referral out to help manage their pain before you touch them? What would be your advice for those types of patients? So those definitely walk through the door.
That's a great question. Because they're expecting pain. Anytime that they go to have a speculum exam or they are hurt and they are really reeling from that exam for anywhere from days to months, and feel that they just grit their teeth and expect that they have to be hurt in order to get better. So right from the start, I tell people that you do not have to experience pain, that I'm not going to hurt you. And the techniques that I have found are to make it so that they feel that they are empowered, that I make them feel comfortable. I say, this is what I'm going to do next. I'm going to ask you to slip off your clothing, put on this gown. I have a pad here so that you can cover yourself up and feel like you have some modesty. I'm going to then expose the pelvic floor region. I'm going to use I have a headgear that is like a vulvoscope, but I got it from Amazon for $10. And it really makes it so that the pelvic floor, everything on the pelvic floor is magnified. So I can look for skin lesions. I can look for all different kinds of active lesions or infections. I make sure that I check in with them at each moment. I touch their thigh and say, this is the amount of pressure that I'm going to be giving you if you feel anything other than that. So I sound a little like a NyQuil commercial. You know, if you have any burning, prickling, aching, soreness, numbness, tenderness, discomfort, pain, or, please let me know and I'll stop instantly. I found that doing positioning them carefully with their legs up on pillows is really helpful. I find using long-handled Q-tips to be beneficial so that I can just manipulate the labia and the genitals really carefully and gently, and using strain counter strain. So I can make it so that all muscles in the, all 14 muscles in the pelvic floor can be put in a slacked or relaxed position so that when I touch it, that there is no pain, or that if they have any kind of discomfort with any burning, prickling, aching, that I say to them that I'm just going to stay right here and we're going to see if it accommodates. And if it doesn't, please let me know within 30 seconds and then we're going to approach it a different way. So I make it so that we're going to listen to the tissues. We're going to listen to that particular person's needs and her or his conditions so that nothing is being forced or manipulated that doesn't want to accommodate or allow it. And that way, I can usually have tremendous success in having people be examined their first time in a year, 3 years, 7 years, and have full examination, all three layers of the muscles without pain because I'm waiting. I'm doing it slowly. One other thing that I do for all of my patients is that I squirt lubricant in. The idea that you're just going to put more lubricant on as something that's going to enter into an orifice is ludicrous because it's just going to be wiped off. So if you can squirt in, use a tiny little oral syringe, and that way there's already tons of lubricant in there so that all exams are much more slippery, lots less friction, less irritation, less problems, and people can utilize that at home, and they find that it's much more comfortable for them too. So that's something that I give to all my patients. Also, talking to them about the different kinds of lubricants. If you have a lubricant that has an osmolarity that is very high, it's going to dehydrate the tissues. So I use particular lubricants such as Slippery Stuff, Good Clean Love, Astroglide without any propylene glycol, and also a number of Silk, Yes products, and a number of other ones that are really great because they are not irritating to the tissues. Anything that has propylene glycol is already causing problems, and that can be something that can be the irritant. So I make sure that I use lubricant inside, lubricant outside. I use vinyl gloves because many people are latex allergic without knowing about it. I go slowly. I ask their permission. I position them comfortably. I tell them, let's go on this tour together so that they can reclaim their and make it so that it feels that it's safe. And for some people, they can't tolerate it. And I say, then that's fine. Let's do an external exam. I can still palpate through the tissues of a number of the muscle layers, and we can find out where there are going to be some areas of tenderness and problems and for you. And let's see if we can get those muscles to let go externally. So that's how I approach it.
That is so much great advice. Thank you so much for going through all of that. And I love the idea of going on a tour together. It's not something you're doing to them. It's something that you are working with that person together to achieve a common goal. I love that. We actually have a caller. So we are going to bring someone in. Hello, welcome. Pelvic Messenger. Are you there?
Yeah, hi. Thank you.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. My name is Sasha. I'm actually a former patient of Holly's. And I have a couple of questions, and I mean, this could either go the professional route or totally like the more personal route. And I'm just wondering, in terms of, if let's say somebody has pelvic floor concerns, and let's say they start experiencing numbness in the pelvic floor, and it's not, I guess I'm just wondering maybe if y'all have any specific routes to take of maybe who to first speak to about it.
Yes, absolutely. Numbness is not a great sign. And so with the musculoskeletal examination, it's really very good to do reflex testing and to find out what's going on at different levels of the neurological chain. So if there's numbness that's occurring in any of the region of the genitalia, that really can tell us that it can be from the cervical spine, it can be from the thoracic spine, it can be from the lumbar spine, it can be from the sacral region, and also even from the coccyx. So I would want to have them see somebody who could do a neurological testing, do some MRI imaging, somebody who can find out what's really happening in terms of numbness.
Okay. In terms of providers regarding or folks who are neurology providers or doctors, would it be helpful if they had a basis in pelvic floor, like general pelvic floor dysfunction, or is it something that folks should theoretically be knowledgeable on?
That's
pelvic floor dysfunction and numbness.
Yeah. With the pelvic floor, it really is a busy place down there. And it's not just, you know, one area. It really is a huge region stretching from the labia all the way to the fallopian tubes, or from, in males, from the testicles all the way to the seminal vesicles. So it involves a number of the different systems, the colorectal system, the reproductive system, urologic system, the GI system, and so many different areas that could be problematic neurologically. So it's really a great idea to have somebody who is quite knowledgeable. Most neurologists would tell you that the pelvic floor is innervated from S2 through S4, because that's the pudendal nerve, and that's the roots of the pudendal nerve from S2 through S4. What we're really finding is that there are innervations to the pelvic floor that come from the T12, L1, all the way through S5. So I would say that this is really somebody that we want that is pretty knowledgeable and doesn't just look at those particular areas. Because if a person has a history of a herniated disc or a bulging disc or any kind of stenosis that's going on somewhere else, that could also be a contributing factor.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Terrific.
Yeah, thank you so much for calling.
Of course.
I think that was an excellent answer, Holly. The innervation is sometimes really hard. I think there is 9 different nerves that innervate. You have your clunials, your coracogeal plexus, posterior femoral cutaneous, pudendal, the ilioinguinal, all those that come from TL junction. So nerve innervation is actually pretty tricky. And I agree that finding someone who is knowledgeable about is an definitely important part of getting good care.
Yeah. You know, that's one of the things that has been one of the major changes that have occurred over the last 30 years is the imaging and functional MRIs being able to really give us more information. And Dr. Hollis Potter is in New York and has her colleagues are real-time ultrasound from a number of physical therapists, particularly Diane Lee and LJ Lee, Allison Ariel, Ruth Jones, Calvin Wong, Tamara, and so many people who are really being able to help us look inside and be able to see what's going on in terms of function. That's just been such a tremendous addition to our standard palpation examinations that we have been doing for so many years. And I don't say that one is better than the other, although there was one article that just recently came out that really said that real-time ultrasound was better, actually, although it couldn't be as specific in terms of one side versus the other for palpations. So I wrote to Diane Lee and I said, you win. and she laughed because of such a proponent of real-time ultrasound and it being a tremendous adjunct. And when I was teaching in Australia, Stuart Bastiste was just tremendous at the course and bringing in perineal and transperineal ultrasound for male. For the males that we had in the course, male models that we had in the course, and being able to see what was going on, and Wendy James and a number of the other people that were there who have utilized real-time ultrasound, it was tremendous and really quite the asset.
That's really, really cool. Are they still, so what they see in the ultrasound helps to guide their treatment, but are they still treating internally manually?
Yes. Well, a lot of times it really helps you to see what's going on in terms of helping patients understand what to do. You know, a lot of times we gave the verbal cues that we got from everybody, and particularly for males from Paul Hodges. Even when you say close around the openings and lift up and in, that really didn't help a number of patients with their urinary incontinence, because what we were seeing was that it wasn't closing off the urethra. It wasn't really closing off the colorectal and anal juncture. So by looking with ultrasound, you can say lift up and in and connect your anus to or your tailbone to your pubic bone or your pubic bone to your anus and to your coccyx. And that can be an even better verbal cue for many patients. Also being able to look and see about lengthening and bearing down of the pelvic floor. So many people with pelvic pain have no idea how to lengthen their pelvic floor. And so looking on with real-time ultrasound can really be an adjunct in order to help people to understand what they're doing and not just bulge their bodies or go into an anterior pelvic tilt. So it is tremendous in the ways that it can help some people to have better understanding of what to do.
Yeah. Do you have one in your clinic? Do you have a real-time ultrasound?
I got one. It is just tremendous. It is really tremendous. It has made just an enormous difference. I'm still a beginner. I'm really a newbie, but I really have to say that I think that it's the more information and different ways that we can help people to understand what's going on and tap into how they understand and can appreciate their workings of their body. Everybody's a unique snowflake. So how people learn, what makes sense to them, what it taps into, the more options, I think, the better.
Yeah, you're so right. Well, we have a couple minutes left, and I was wondering if you could, or if you have any sort of general overall advice about how PTs can play just a bigger role in improving sexual function in men and women. Oh, I actually think we lost you. Holly, are you there? Holly? All right, we will wait a little bit to see if Holly calls back in. Thank you for everyone out there who is listening. We do have about 5 minutes left, so if anyone else does want to call in and ask a question, just a reminder, the number to call is, I have it somewhere. The number to call in is 323-693-3847. And anyone can ask a question. We will wait a little bit longer to see if she calls back in. And if not, then we will wrap this up. I hope you've been enjoying listening to her. She is such an amazing advocate for her field and so knowledgeable. Well, I do not see her calling back in, so, oh, here she is.
Hi,
Holly. I can hear you.
Good.
You there?
Yes, I'm here. I just wanted to say that I am so grateful to the thousands of physical therapists that have been dedicated and innovated and visionary all over the world, sharing their information via the internet, Facebook groups, LinkedIn, Twitter, conferences, research, clinical case studies, and their expertise. I am so grateful for the inclusion of men's pelvic health, the explosion of male physiotherapists in the field, for all of the different groups that are formed for just World Health Conference. There were many things that were in pelvic health, IPPS for ISHWISH, ASEC, STAR, NAMS, APTA, OGS, and IUGA, NVA, and so many other groups that have really promoted. For all of you who have blogs and 3D videos and newsletters and have integrated your medical therapeutic yoga practices and mindfulness, I thank you for all of your help and your contributions to the field. And I am grateful that this is just moving forward for all of our patients to be able to find help.
Paul, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Sorry, I think you got cut off at the end, but thank you so much. For saying that you've contributed so much and yet you are so humble. So on behalf of myself and Beyond Basic Physical Therapy and all the other PTs who have learned so much from you and have benefited from all your hard work and just curiosity, thank you. Thank you for continuing to push us all forward, and thank you for continuing to humbly lead us and serve us and educate us. So thank you, thank you.
And
for those of you, you're welcome.
I appreciate it. You know, I now go to so many courses of people that have new ideas and innovation that I am so grateful for learning new things and for people bringing their take on what this population and working with the populations that need us the most. So I want to thank you for the opportunity to be with you, and hopefully that this was something that could be a show that could spark people to want to be on the show also to talk about what they do and how they help their patients.
Yeah. Well, thank you for coming on. And for all of those who are listening, I hope that you will join both Holly and I at the 2017 ICPS and Third World Congress of Abdominal and Pelvic Pain Annual Conference in Washington, D.C. this October. If you want any more information or would like to give back to the pelvic pain community, please visit the International Pelvic Pain Society website at pelvicpain.org. And I'd like to thank all our sponsors who make the show possible, Beyond Basic Physical Therapy New York and the International Pelvic Pain Society. And thanks most to you, our listeners, for staying tuned and for your curiosity. I hope that you come back for more Pelvic Messenger radio shows. Thank you all very much. Bye, Holly.
Bye-bye.
Do you suffer from chronic CFED or can't focus energy drain? Try over-the-counter Vibrin. One tablet contains the same caffeine as a cup of coffee, but without the calories or coffee breath. Vibrin, caffeine, not coffee. Taking Vibrin may result in a lack of drowsiness, improved productivity, and better cash flow from decreased coffee spending. Unexpected job promotions have been associated with Vibrin. Vibrin may decrease the urge to zone out, doze off, or exhibit signs of slacking. All jokes aside, always read the label, take only as directed, and limit caffeine as it may cause real side effects. Not for children under age 12.
When the weather suddenly changes, NBC Boston's early warning weather has you covered. The NBC Boston team has the tools and the technology to keep you safe. With Sky Ranger flying high over Boston watching the roads, or Storm Ranger, our one-of-a-kind mobile Doppler radar, and Weather Warrior, our four-wheel drive storm chaser. When the weather changes, early warning weather has you covered. On the only NBC station in Boston, NBC Boston Channel 10.